Welcome to Vikings and Valkyries, an actual play podcast. We are playing When the Wolf Comes, an RPG set in the twilight of gods and men. Joining me at the end of all things are Steve, Bill, CJ, and Taylor. Welcome to you, Hounds of the Norns.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
I'm gonna die.
Hey, hello.
I'm in danger.
And loving it.
So here we all are, and there are no guests beyond Taylor to introduce this week. And Taylor's part of the family now. He's been around for a few episodes. There are no guests, mainly because you've killed them all.
Yep, I told you guys it would work.
Any remorse?
Extraneous circumstances killed them all.
We just happened to be there every time.
They're in Valhalla, no. They're in a better place. They'd want it that way.
They might have gone straight to hell.
Well, save us a seat.
Okay, so today we are playing the first part of Mother's Night. We're going to dive into the quiz. And again, remember, these are kind of thematically linked. You can draw a little thread between what I conjure here and what's going to go on in the adventure. So the question I have for you today is... For you to earn your inspiration point, can you name all of the Norns?
No.
No, me neither.
A rooster.
What?
That was the answer to a question a couple of quizzes ago that I didn't get.
Oh, okay.
So I memorized it. I have a big note on my monitor here, so just in case it comes up again.
I have heard the names, but I have not committed them to memory. They're kind of a group package, so like, why?
Wow. I bet they love being lumped together. All right, I'll take a crack. One is Thumbelina.
Okay. Yeah.
Does she dance or does she sing?
That's Terpsichore you're thinking of.
Buttercup.
Buttercup is the second one. That's correct.
Yeah, this is well known.
And then Tinkerbell. That's the three right there. Thumbelina, Buttercup, and Tinkerbell. Thank you for the point. And I'm having trouble with figuring out what the theme is. But
there's a great work of art called None Outlive the Night the Norns Have Spoken. You should look it up. It's a fun piece. The Norns were the creatures that would determine the period of men's and women's lives and allot their fates. The three primary Norns, as described in Gylfaginning, were Urtha, Verdandi, and Skald. And these giant maids were the ones that came to appoint men's lives. But there are also many other Norns. Some were Aesir kin, some were Elfkind, and some were Dvalin's daughters. Good Norns and those of honorable races delivered good life, and those men that suffered evil fortunes were governed by evil Norns. So,
since they were borrowed from a common Indo-European belief system, can I get a half inspiration point for telling you the name of the Greek fates, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos? Does that work? I don't know why I know. Why do I know Greek mythology better than Norse mythology?
Larry, Curly, and Moe.
Yeah.
Are the three you're thinking
weird
of.
Weird sisters.
You're right in the sense that they were, the governesses of fate, and they would twine and twirl or carve people's fates in the runes at the bottom of the world tree, Yggdrasil. But no inspiration for you this week. You're going to have to just rely on your wits.
You know why I remember the Greek ones? Because Disney made a movie with them. Mm. Millennials!
Hercules!
Okay, let's jump straight into the adventure. To set the scene, the ship, the Falkir, is badly damaged. Not only did it suffer a hull breach in the battle that brought you here, but your pilot and your crew are either dead or have abandoned their posts. The orbital ring Mimis Bruna is under siege by Dread Orkneus, and worse, Bangsy of Valdison, or at least the past version of Bangsy, is piloting a shuttle named Gungnir towards the system's sun. and you know full well what happens when he reaches it. The star goes supernova, and everything in your immediate environs is utterly obliterated. The only saving grace is that Mim has restored power, allowing you to gear up the thought and memory drive. However, when we left the last episode, it had turned out that the shapeshifter had been impersonating Raggedy, had lured you aboard, and now the vicious beast is glowering in the pilot's seat, sitting next to the befuddled form of Cole, who is aghast that his pilot and long-term comrade has been replaced by this shape-shifting trickster.
Are we all in the Raven's Nest?
You are.
All right. Gigi is going to look at Lomi and say, could I borrow that bird head that you have around your neck?
Of course, here.
He's going to use it to turn back the clock 10 minutes to just before they get on the ship. So we're all going to show back up just before getting on the ship with the full knowledge that the shapeshifter's on there. My mistake, everyone, and I shall fix it. And so he's going to march back onto the ship just before we all supposedly got onto the ship. Walk toward the armory. I hope you're all following. He's going to walk toward the armory.
Yes, following.
Grab some flamethrowers. Hand them over to everybody. Here, you get a flamethrower. You get a flamethrower. He's the Oprah of flamethrowers. You get a flamethrower. He is being kind of loud, so hopefully this works. And then they're going to walk up to the Raven's Nest, and they're going to see Tilda's character, Ragni. And he's going to have the flamethrower out. And I presume she's going to look at him as he walks into the room.
And she'll say her line as she did from last time and welcome you to the ship in the nick of time.
And in fact, I have a problem that you might be able to help me with. Allow me to approach a little bit. There's just something stuck with this. And then he's going to pull the trigger of the flamethrower and just douse her with flame. And then, by the way, he's going to say, a little help. We're going to need at least two of these to kill it.
Happily.
You'll remember that Ragni, or the shapeshifter that impersonates her, has the Ironsides ability. And so she roars, tossing back her head with laughter as the flames course down her body, not impacting her in the slightest.
Not the controls. We need those.
We have it cornered!
Now, Ironsides is a triggered ability, so were you to apply overwhelming force and everyone unleash their flame caster fuel in her direction, then it would beat down those mythic defenses and enable her to take damage.
Okay, whatever you do, don't cross the stream!
Leomi opens up with the flamethrower going...
It's been a while, Bill, since you have been singed and burned. You've overcome your fear of flame and fire.
I don't really like it still. It's not my favorite.
Taylor, it's difficult for you to have to burn at least the form of a friend.
I imagine I'm far more outraged having the experience of seeing her mocked in such a way of being shapeshifted and pretended to be, you know, and it's the desecration of my crew fills me with a righteous fury that I pour into every ounce of fuel that is coming from my flamethrower.
And Steve, you're lighting one up as well?
Absolutely. Air is lighting one up. He giggles a little bit and is like, if only I'd had one of these against the Tartars. If only. I should take this back with me somehow.
In the interests of allowing yourselves to feel vindicated against this long-feared and finally vanquished foe, you may roll some dice sixes. So two dice six each and double it because the creature is one of the breed of Orcus, the sons of Niffle, that are joined to the frozen side of the planet, and so suffer double damage with flames.
18 from me.
12.
12 as well.
Oh, I got 18 as well. I just want to say I rolled double sixes on one of my rolls. I was like super stoked about it.
Nice.
I went, ah! I rolled something well for once. Oh my goodness.
The shapeshifter collapses in a roiling sea of flame and withers into dust and ashes that drift across the raven's nest.
Oh, and then Gigi has a final line where he says, I have had enough of you! And he just keeps firing, even though it's like overkill at this point. Someone needs to tell him the horse is dead.
Don't burn my ship.
I'm just waiting for the sprinklers to go off.
You know, the Raven's Nest doesn't have a sprinkler system, but is made of resilient ironwood. So other than some light charring to the pilot's seat, I think you'll get away with it. In the kind of bigger sense, you know, the flame caster is the least of your concerns because the whole sun is about to go supernova, and that might be a little bit more scorching, cause a little bit more sunburn.
So 3d6.
3d6. The bar is on. Who is going to pilot the ship?
I will. I'll need somebody for the thought and memory drive, though.
Do we need
someone other than Gigi?
Yes. So, do I need the skull for piloting the thing, or no? I don't.
The skull will give you the necessary wheels along with your rudimentary piloting ability. You have sat in the pilot's chair and learned from Ragni. So, between you, Cole, and Leomi, the two alpha, the two wise old souls, could pull their collective wisdom of all of those ages and attempt to spool up the thought and memory drive.
Leomi turns to Gigi and says, give me the bird skull, please, big men.
He hands it over.
Thank you.
So, we know the drill. In order to pilot the thought memory drive, you have to turn on the oblivion link. You have to wear your flight visors, and beneath those visors, you think of your destination. You visualize the destination that either pilot has previously visited or seen, and then after linking your minds through that link, through that device, you will be able to concentrate for a minute and use a triggered action to teleport your ship to the place that you visualized as that destination.
So an oblivion link, and if you're an oblivious person, then that, I assume that helps. I think no wonder I'm good at this.
Checks out.
Exactly how it works. That was what was in the schematic that you read anyway. I am going to, though, ask you two pilots to make a will roll for me. The sense of doom and trepidation that creeps over you, knowing that at any moment the star could go supernova, delivers a crawling fear at the back of your mind. So let's have a will roll to avoid being frightened.
I rolled an 11. 11Z.
I also rolled an 11.
11Zs. Natural 11Zs. That's going to be a bonus.
How far power?
All right. The ship hums with expectant energy, and aided by the skull of the Raven Moonin, you can feel yourself visit all kinds of vistas from your long and memorable lives. The ship sparks into life and you begin to drift out of the hangar, taking your path along the Raven Roads. In that split second, Surt reaches out its sword. The light is excruciating, catastrophically bright, and even at this distance, the Valkyr groans. The sword swings further still, cleaving the heavens with two brilliant beams of destruction. The planet below you, the planet of ice and fire, shatters, the crust and hot iron innards spilling into the cool gap, a stream of rocks and particles sucked into the coruscating clouds of light at the edge of an emerging, ominous black disk. Mimis Brunir, the orbital station, boils away into a witch's room. Now, that's not something you see every day, and witnessing the end of a planet and the end of all of those lives, you can hear the echoing screams as they are snuffed out of existence. Can you all make me a will roll with three woes?
12.
It's still 11.
9.
13.
Turns out it's only CJ who has any kind of conscience. Who wants to turn up for the books? So, CJ, you don't get fear from this, but you are deeply perturbed. Please add 3 trauma to your total.
Oh, dear.
Miguel and I had our visors down. We couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
Wait. I forgot. Yeah, so the as the sun's exploding and everyone's dying and they're screaming, Gigi is deeply disturbed, but also...
Very disturbing little laugh.
I love it.
Any thoughts, any plans? You're all in the Raven's Nest. You've all survived this cataclysm. The sword fall is Ragnarok delivered to your doorstep.
Well, crap.
Hot. Looks very hot.
It does look very hot. You're right, Bill. It was searing, scorching. The people who remain will be burnt into the shadows of existence. Looking out of the hollows of the ship, what passes for windows in this bio ship made of ironwood, you're thundering along the hell roads, and outside you notice that the light rays are moving in spirals. They're not just direct beams of light. You watch transfixed as the past, the present, and future versions of the Falkir, like circular echoes, flicker in and out of reality. It's like you are part of a swarm of phasing Falkir bees. And Leomi, that's when you spot it. Something moving near the solar sails. It looks like a flaming inferno, a human torch scuttling slowly across the hull. Man-sized, it stands upright, appearing unaffected by the vacuum or the cold, and then it stares back at you.
There's something on the sail.
And it's watching you curiously in the same way as that you might watch an animal at the zoo.
There's a thing on the sail. Do you see it?
Do we see it?
If anyone else goes to the window, to the hollow, to peer into this bright white void, again, the light rays moving in spirals around your ship, you, Steve, don't see a flaming torch.
Instead,
a huge, fat cat that is rending the solar sails with its feral claws.
There's a flaming thing on the wing, and it's the sail is staring at me.
It's clearly a giant cat. Don't panic.
He's just going to run for a window and go, "Is it a darkness?"
Gigi, being immune to the frightened condition that has a giant's bane, you see absolutely nothing on the solar sails, and you wonder what all the fuss is about. Taylor, I don't know if you or Cole have anything that you're particularly phobic about?
I don't believe I do.
Perhaps you see a giant Gigi out there. Perhaps you just see CJ outside ripping.
That's my new phobia. Yeah.
Sails. Yeah.
Destroying my manuscripts and my lore. Yeah.
Could Air cast ancestral wisdom once he's already afraid in order to get rid of the frightened condition and make himself immune to it?
I will say that yes, the ancestral spirits will gird your lines and bolster your mental defenses and enable you to shrug off the fear that had been gnawing at your core and enable you to proceed with valor.
Oh, I still see the cat.
You still see a huge butterball of a cat.
Oh, it's just a kitty. What's it doing out there?
It's a flaming thing. It's looking at me. It's hot. I can feel the heat. I can feel the heat.
In any instance, whether it is using its feline claws to rip apart the solar sails, or whether it is using its fiery fist to pummel them, or whether it is using a strange version of the heirloom sword, Bearpaw, to shred the sails, something is happening out there that is causing damage to the ship out in the vacuum of the void.
It'll kill us all. Jump on it, Gigi.
I'm stuck inside. I don't see anything. It's empty. It's fine.
It'll kill us all. It's tearing it apart. It's tearing the ship apart.
Cole, your ship that has suffered so much at the hands of Orkneus, that has been involved in Imperial blockades, that took part in the scorching of Jotunheim, now it is being rent asunder by a strange creature out on the wing. It is tugging at your very core.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely doing damage. It's not the illusion of damage. I can tell that the ship is, slowing or degrading or, suffering real damage.
If you had marrow, you would feel it in your bones. Perhaps you can...
It's sap.
Yes. You can feel it. You can feel it deep in your insert tree part here.
We need to get this thing off my ship. I've had it with these insert curse words here. Orkneus and their tricks. We must cleanse our ship. We have any spacesuits?
You do have more gap suits in the extravehicular pour that you could put on. Before you do so, echoing through the hull, echoing into your minds, emanating like thought waves, you hear a shrill female voice say,
"This weft is woven with entrails of men."
Am I the only one who heard that, or does everyone hear it?
Everyone heard that resonating through their brain, or what passes for them.
So everyone heard that, right?
It's probably not good.
No. How long until we arrive wherever we're going? Is this going to prevent us from getting there?
That remains undetermined. Certainly, okay. Your two pilots would have to leave the Oblivion Link and unplug themselves were they to try and deal with this threat.
This weft is woven with the entrails of men. Is that what it was?
That's correct. There is a second line that floats through your consciousness. Again, it's almost as if the creature is reaching out telepathically, and it says,
"This warp is hard weighted with the heads of the slain."
So weft and warp refer to weaving. It's, yeah.
As we're all sitting here silently, we could be said to be gathering wool. That fits.
Wool or woe?
Wool, I said, but woe might be truer.
Yeah.
You could say our minds are spinning.
Nice.
No, he could.
Would Air need a gap suit to go? We would, wouldn't he?
No, you don't breathe, so, you know.
Yeah, you go deal with it. That's a good idea.
Take the big one.
Okay.
Sure. Air has a flamethrower and doesn't need a suit. He's feeling unnecessarily confident.
Would a flamethrower work in space?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Does he know that?
Probably not.
Well, you know, so the flamethrower is the greatest thing ever invented. And he wants to use it on everything at the moment. So...
But fire only works in the presence of oxygen.
Why are we helping the Game Master? I don't understand. I mean, he probably would have picked up on that one. I'll give that to you.
Yeah.
But still.
We literally went through it last episode as the space elevator hurtled into the atmosphere and everyone said, no, you can't use it there because there's no oxygen. Right. One of the things, Steve, just to remind you, as you have perfected your mastery of Gandcraft, you have other things beyond a glorified lighter to your name.
Oh, yes. Yeah, at the moment, it's more of an emotional support flamethrower than anything that's actually going to be effective.
So, just a minute. He's a master of Gandcraft, and he's a Dark Alphar. So, he's a Gandalf.
Well,
only took 18 episodes. Yes. Gand is an Old Norse word for wand. So, the weaver... But that is what it is. Mm-hmm. Phases between the bulkhead and the raven's nest and confronts you head on. It has simply drifted between the exterior vacuum through the ironwood hull and now stands immediately in front of you. Again, Steve, Air sees the huge meowing cat. CJ, you have actually started to see something. It hasn't appeared to you in the form of your greatest fear. These creatures, their true form is unknowable. They often adopt a shape that is best suited to their victim. In your case, you see a tangled web of entrails on a bloody loom. It doesn't horrify you, but you do appreciate that there is some kind of distortion of reality there. Leomi, you continue to see a flaming human torch. And Cole, if the figure once seemed to you like a caricature of Gigi, it now appears much more like an impossible object that defies Euclidean geometry.
Is it here in the Raven's Nest with us?
Mm-hmm. It has entered your command center, this being born of paradox. Cole, as the oldest amongst your crewmates, you can see that it is constantly adding new intricacies to the pattern of existence.
Refining its clarity and its shape and its complexity, essentially.
And also cutting the threads between your timeline and any other timelines. You see the structure that it passed through, the ironwood hull of the Raven's Nest, begin to fade from existence. And then there is a snap as reality shatters like a broken mirror and the void begins to encroach into your ship's con. Bus turn or a slow turn?
I want to use the Gandreed ability, Ian.
You may yourself phase in and out of reality using your latest addition to your talents as a thread rider. Similar to this creature, you can drift in and out of reality and can take both a fast turn and a slow turn.
Can I do those both right now? You can do fast and slow turn.
Okay, good. Can. I'm going to take a fast turn and a slow turn and possibly a slower turn. And after that, come back to me and I'll tell you what I'm doing, Tim.
Yeah, I'm just firing up the spreadsheet. It won't be but a moment.
I think Cole's had it. I'm going to fast turn it and just start shooting this thing. I'm so pissed off at it touching my ship.
What are you shooting at it with, Taylor?
I'm going to use my Holstfetzer. And I'm going to make three attacks because...
Because you can.
Because I can.
Because you demand.
Because I'm pissed. First one. Ooh. That is a 19 for the first one. Second one is a 5, and third one is an 8. So I'm guessing that's just one hit.
So the first shot, full of rage and venom, strikes true. Roll for your damage as you let a burst of bullets fly.
That's not great. 4.
Strangely, the bullets appear to slow as they reach the creature, and whilst they pass through its translucent body and clearly do some kind of damage, their force is spent, and the creature appears barely harmed.
Like throwing a baseball at it.
I'm going to, for my first turn, I would like to cast Against a Dwarf.
For the benefit of people at home and for Steve, who appears very confused, we did just discuss this as we were in the green room waiting for a round.
Yes, you get a dwarf and you hold something against it, and then that casts a spell. No, it's an ancient charm. I make a will attack roll against the target's will. On a success, it's impaired for 1 hour, as 1d6 penalty to its power. And an affected target can try and break out of the spell.
Super. So, the Norse regarded Dvurg dwarves as evil spirits, and so they created charms against them, which Leomi has now cast. Do you want to make your roll then, Bill?
Is it a wits roll?
Mm-hmm.
Said with confidence. Turned out to be right. Well, I got a three. Three.
That was your fast turn, or was that your slow turn? Do you want to take the extra action? Do you want to beat a hasty retreat now that you have
failed?
failed abysmally?
Yes. Well, I was thinking, I have some good stuff here. Just, I've got it.
If it's any consolation.
Yes.
It's
I'm
immune,
sure it won't be.
It's immune to the impaired condition. And so even had you succeeded, it would have been as if you had lightly sneezed on it.
How about, I'd like to do a reversed everlasting runes, which instead of healing all damage, will cause all damage, if I'm interpreting the reversal correct. All damage, Ian. Not some damage, all damage.
That's correct. So you have the Valkyrie ability to invert your life spells, and so whereas everlasting runes would heal someone in totality, your choosers of the slain ability enables you to flip that and cause it to lose all of its health in one go. So make a will attack roll against the creature's might.
What's its might? You're looking at the book, CJ.
What?
What's its might, Ian?
Its might is...
Oh, for the creature.
Yeah. Sorry. You were busy reading. I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's bad. It's really bad. It's like
essentially infinite.
It's 17.
Oh, I rolled a 17. I genuinely rolled a 17.
See, that's its slight. CJ is reading it wrong. It doesn't actually have a might score.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I missed that. Whoops.
And so it cannot be affected in this manner. Unfortunately, it is immune to this kind of physical damage. And so you have chosen the wrong person to be slain.
And okay, I see. So I've used two spells, both for the first time. And it had zero effect. I just want to summarize the action.
Hey, I'm really proud of you, though. I'm really proud of you.
Thank, you've done
thank
great.
You, Taylor, that means a lot.
I'm really come along,
Gobsmacked. Yeah.
I feel you ought to say ta-da afterwards.
Ta-da! With hand gestures for those at home.
So, Taylor has blasted ineffectually. Bill has attempted a range, a panoply of abilities to no avail.
Zero effect.
Steve and CJ, what do you have up your sleeveses?
How would you like to fail?
I've got something. So we're going. Air's going to use the wise counsel to do two things. The first one would be to cast a to cast Gandfly, using night games to make it potent by taking stress, so he doesn't have to roll to hit, because I have a feeling that's not going to work anyways. And the damage would be 3d6. So that that adds up to 9 points of damage. I was going to say it would. Any other creature would also make a might roll, but I think we can safely skip that part. And then the second thing is, because he's gathered strain, he will then use Sorcerer's Storm to immediately release that strain as a blast against the Weaver.
Wow.
It's worth a try. So he's going to make a wits roll against its slight.
Give me the roll.
Good, it will do. The total is 15 wits.
Who needs a flamethrower when you can level cities with your Sorcerer's Storms? In this case, unfortunately, you miss. But you made...
Well, he does take half damage.
Yeah, you made a fair fist of things, literally using the power of the ether against this creature. So it does take some damage, but it's negligible. As far as you can see, little kitty has slightly singed fur.
Yeah, that's what kind of expected.
I have... two questions. If I take a slow turn, does that mean that I can cast a spell and shoot?
Nope.
Okay.
You can move and use an action. And an action would be to shoot or to cast a spell.
And if I take a fast turn, then I can cast a spell and shoot?
You almost said it right that time, CJ. Just don't go up into a question at the end. You notice when I said, I'm going to reverse my spell and do all the damage? I didn't ask it as a question. It made no difference in the end, but,
I was just trying to get some clarification here. Okay, so I'm going to take the laughter as a no.
The only reason that Steve can perform, or Steve or Bill can perform both...
We're special.
...is that they are... special. They've both got abilities that enable them, in a limited set of circumstances, to take two actions. You don't have something similar.
No, but I do have an ability that gives me extra damage. So this is the next question, because those were part of the first question. The next question is anyone standing behind the horrifying fracture?
So no, you're standing in front of it. So it has phased through the hull and has entered the Raven's Nest. However, I am going to remind you that you do actually have the Shape Strong gift, where you can push yourself beyond your normal limits. When you take a turn, you can use that gift to increase your number of actions that round by one. You have to make a might challenge roll at the end of that round and possibly become fatigued, but such is your genetically enhanced engineering that you can push yourself beyond the limits of normal men.
Yeah, CJ.
So can I use that and Orlog and shoot twice?
Correct.
Ooh!
And what you could do is now apply your Bloody Runes, your latest addition to your arsenal.
We can do that later. The Orlog, if I do it at level 4, gets me more damage than that.
It does, but only in one go, whereas all of the attacks for a minute would get 3d6 as opposed to one attack with 4d6.
I'm sorry, how do these guys now know how to play their characters? What happened over the last week? This is really
it's
weird.
Spring.
No, I'm asking we're coming questions. Out of I'm hibernation. Yeah, let's do that. So I'm going to use the Shape Strong. Get my Taylor's two actions.
Space is so great.
Cast Blood Runes, which will get me the extra damage. And, pull out the Storm Shooter and just say, I don't know what you are, but I shall now descend you by your backside. And then start shooting.
I'm also going to assume that that is a cutting insult. And so anyone else says you're using a triggered, action there. And so anyone else will benefit from your tongue lashing. So give me your roll for damage. Is it burst fire or are you just trying to hit it?
That's a great question. What does more damage? Burst fire, probably.
Burst fire means that you are guaranteed, even if it makes its light roll, to just for it to take half damage. You might miss with just a regular shot.
Do burst.
But okay, I don't know. I think I'm going to do a regular shot, and I'm going to play the fate here.
Okay.
I'm going to shoot right at it. You ready?
Oh, can't watch. I can't watch.
Drum roll.
I can't see, but I can't watch. Oh, that's it.
He's gone under the table.
Can you drop him from the call in?
Oh my
I
goodness!
I told you to jump on it.
Don't that one, bitches. I rolled a one.
So would you like to recount to us what happens when Gigi attempts to do all of this thing as his shape strong new god, casting spells, etching runes, and firing all in one go?
It's going to look really sexy, and he's going to do his cutting insults, and then the gun is going to jam. And then he's going to shake. He's going to look down the barrel. It's still going to be jammed. I'm stuck, everyone!
Yeah, well, that's good. It shows the extent to which he has learned the rules, because there are misfire rules for guns, and he has now just applied those. So the challenge now with your storm shooter is you will have to unclog it and fix it before you can fire it again. So you might want to make a quick bolt for the armory to get something new or to unholster your flame caster. All right, I'm going to roll for the creature. It is going to come straight for Captain Cole.
So Taylor, all of our expertise turned out to just be kind of window dressing or a new hat.
I'm just still amazed and proud that you got there. You advertised well.
We've gone from incompetent to ineffective.
And that is a step up.
That's
on
pretty
the
good.
Ladder.
That's true. That is a step up the ladder. It's true.
Gigi has shown us this is how you win second place in the All Asgard Honky Tonk or whatever it was. We're all really proud.
In the Honky Tonk of Amon.
Yeah. The Weaver rushes towards Captain Cole and lays a discordant hand on your shoulder. You are going to take 14 damage. But then I also need you to make a might challenge roll, please.
Okay, 1 second. 14 points of damage. Ouch. Okay, and you said a might?
A might challenge roll, please. Okay.
Since I'm in microgravity, I can use free faller, right?
You can.
Jeez, perfect.
And you also have tough as nails.
I do have tough nails as well, but I was already damaged from last episode.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
That would be a 21.
Nice.
On the couch.
You shrug off the sense that fate has a bullet with your name on it. That's that fate has decreed that you are about to expire. You shrug off that feeling and you take no trauma. However, this is a horrifying creature that has jumped in front of all of you. So with the exception of Steve, who is immune to trauma, can all of you give me a will roll with one woe?
You'll be fine. Just walk it off.
I'd rather not, but all right.
With one woe, you say?
Please.
3 minus 2.
Oh.
Ooh.
I think I need some different dice.
10 minus 3. I got a 7.
3 minus 4.
This council doesn't help, huh?
Just racking up the trauma today.
Yeah. So, Bill, you get 2 trauma, and you are frightened. Dayla, you get 1 trauma, and you are frightened. CJ, you get 1 trauma, but are immune to the frightened condition. So, you know, you're just going a little more loopy. Taylor, do you want to use Steadfast to try and shrug that off as a triggered action?
Yeah, I would.
So that's a will roll.
Ooh, that makes that a 22.
Splendid. So you, being steadfast, instantly shrug off again that doubt and fear that have begun to creep into your mind. It's only Leomi who stands there mouthing and... and doing whatever Bill's doing on camera.
hot. Yeah.
Exactly. It is, you're facing your human torch and you have been singed again. It really is like that meme. This as the dog fun. Burns.
Yes, that's the one.
The weaver takes a slow turn. It had used its attack and it now drifts through the bulkhead, passing through the wall out of the raven's nest into the captain's ready room and beyond. As it goes, again, it cuts the thread between timelines, and you can see the ship around you becoming translucent. A swirling starry void lurks outside. Again, this spiral of stars indicating that you are traveling faster than light itself.
Someone should follow it.
The creature again enters your mind with an all-pervasive, dominating thought as it says,
"Spears, blood besprinkled, for spindles we use."
How big is the ready room?
The ready room is not large. This is not a voluminous ship. It is perhaps 5 yards by 5 yards.
Gigi is going to go up to the door to the ready room, crack it open, and toss in a whole belt of grenades again. But hopefully, this time, it works.
Okay, so we will enable you to do that as a slow turn, because you will have to follow the creature through the ironwood tunnels of the ship in order to get to the door to toss the grenades. Anyone want to take a fast turn before that, or you want to follow up as Gryotgarth enters the rest of the ship?
Air will follow, just to see what happens.
Leomi will follow. Sorry, Steve. Yeah. I'm just following for now.
Yeah, not going to miss this.
I'll follow, but can I also do a triggered action to do energy burst?
You can.
I will. Heal 13.
Energy burst is the ability of the Oathsworn to heal themselves on the fly. And just in case the word heal triggered any residual memory in your fellow Alpha, I'll mention it again. Who knows? Yes. Listening to the last episode, I must have missed it because, there's a lot going on. But he did at one stage say that he was going to cast healing herbs. He then just didn't give anyone the healing herbs.
He summoned them and just helped them.
He just helped them. And perhaps he sniffed them, He was just like, it was aromatherapy.
I had them here in a box. They're lovely.
My God.
It's like in the Civil War, where they've dug up, from the battles and they found muskets that still had the poles in them, it's loud, it's chaotic, you don't know. That's us. We're like going through the motions. We look good.
All right, toss your grenades then. And if anyone else wanted to do anything from behind...
Air would like to cast Insight and ask the seer in the ear, can we defeat this weaver?
No.
That simplifies that a bit. Do I tell anyone?
The spirit of your esteemed former colleague, Fionn the Skald, also goes so far as to tell you that a weaver is sent by the Norns to repair the timelines, which you have very thoroughly broken. So it is in the process of removing the Falkir from existence. Well, there are multiple Falkirs around, as you know. Not all of them can exist at the same time. And so this creature is a fracture that is determined to eliminate the vessel that you command. The problem with that is that you will then be passed into the void, and that's not a good place to be on a Monday afternoon. However, your bandolier of grenades explode like the 4th of July parade, and any mementos, personal knickknacks, ship's logs that the captain might have had are instantly evaporated, cleansed by flame and fury. The creature itself continues to dissect the ship and says,
Howloom, ironbound, and arrows our wheels. With swords for our shuttles, this war weft we work.
I'm sure that's fine.
Did it take any damage?
By all means, roll me some damage.
An act of faith at this point, CJ.
I don't remember. With the belt of grenades, how much damage am I doing?
14d6.
There we go. Challenge accepted. Am I really doing 14d6?
It's 20d6.
It's 20d6? give me a... I'll just go on mute. I'll be back. I'll be back.
Cole, have you any thoughts, considering you do have that repel borders trait? You also have the sense that this creature is about to rip your ship into its constituent parts and mean that the noble Falkir had never existed.
I mean, repel borders sounds helpful, but it seems to not take any damage, so I don't know if it'll actually do anything. It feels like we're fighting kind of fate itself, so I don't really know if violence can beat it, but I also think Cole is just so outraged at his ship going down that, you know, I don't know how clearly he would be thinking in this moment.
57.
Nice.
Attaboy.
Good roll. The explosion shatters the room, sending detritus everywhere. The creature is somewhat hurt. It clearly can sustain the damage. It doesn't take all of that. But there is also the challenge that lobbing explosives around inside a interstellar vessel tends to have a little bit of impact on its structural integrity, and you can hear a low, slow hiss as air begins to be sucked out into the vacuum of the Gununga Gap.
Not me. The other air.
James.
So now the question is the creature big enough for me to climb on top of it?
Asking the important questions.
That's what I've been saying the whole episode. Jump on it. Jump on it.
We will be able to see as you have attracted its attention and it rushes towards you, warping reality as it slithers towards you again. You're seeing this kind of tangled web of entrails. Please make a slight challenge roll.
17 plus 2. Actually, no, it's 3 now because we're level 9. No, it's 2. It's 2. 19.
You narrowly avoid being trapped in a temporal loop as the creature rushes past you and again drifts into a different part of the ship.
What are we going to do? We need a better plan. We've hit it with the hardest things we have, and it's doing nothing.
It did something.
Not enough.
Well, okay. Air's having a bit of a... He's staring into space. Well, I mean, as he does anyways. Having a bit of a question about this is that if this weaver has come to repair time by removing us from time to fix that, why wouldn't they undo the doom? Why wouldn't they undo the supernova? Why wouldn't they undo the creation of the Alphar and the Dark Alphar and let Air go back to Valhalla where he really wants to be? Like, I mean, why one thing and not the other? Why do we need to be undone? Well, the ship specifically.
Let's go back to first principles.
So what you're telling me is your action is you want to brew a nice cup of tea and have a philosophical debate.
Have a think.
I expect the kettle is long since gone, isn't it?
Hey, he's not an airhead.
I blew it up.
Well,
the captain's kettle has either been reduced to its constituent parts or sucked out into the vacuum of the gap. One of the two, but yeah, poor Cole isn't making any chamomile tea anytime soon.
That's got to be worth trauma right there, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Much trauma. Could we use the thought and memory drive to get back into our timeline? Would that basically get us out of here? However we got in, get back to it? Because we're being literally ripped apart from this timeline.
Ooh.
You are effectively in a time slipstream. You have not completed your thought and memory jump, but the whole process has been arrested mid-flight by the Norns, who are re-threading, retwining time.
What Taylor is asking, though, is can we do the time?
We pick up the action. Oh, yeah, thanks.
With the jump to the left?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's the one. And just a step to the right.
Let's do it again.
There is a dismal, distant thudding as one of the dragon guns detonates on the far side of the ship.
It's at this point in the combat I start looking forward to the next recording session so I can find out what we should have done. Because I sure don't know right now. Oh my god.
We can't defeat it. The voices in my head have told me this. Maybe it's best to just let it happen.
Oh, what else is on the ship? What other things are on the ship?
All of the crew were either slain by the shapeshifter or else, like Gidda, had decided to discreetly abandon ship and take her life into her own hands.
Did we have the bear cubs with us? At one point, we were protecting them.
Ah, so you're right. The bowels of the ship, so to speak, were turned into a makeshift kennel and bear den. Down below, stored near where the solar sails would be furled, are the two bear cubs that you rescued, and a group of huskies, of sled dogs that you had brought on board and that were serving as a kind of shapeshifter detection device, although you failed to heed their warning.
Hence the barking. Yeah.
Well, they were barking so much we had to put them away. I am going to go check on the bear cubs, Naomi says, and the wolves.
And while the rest of you are waxing philosophical, I am going to go to the armory, pick up a bigger gun, and keep trying to kill this thing, because I am convinced it can be killed.
Oh, it can be killed. It's just whether...
whether we can kill it. And will it matter?
Steve, you do have some impressive things in your arsenal now, as I said, the master of Gandalf. Did you want to unveil to everyone, with a sense of style and panache, your level 5 spell that you can wield?
Yes.
I mean...
Unveil!
That just seems like it'll... Okay, no, fine.
I didn't say use it, I just said unveil it.
No, I'm thinking of using it. It is, air can create a black hole. I mean, it's not a big one. It's just a little tiny one. And everything in a 10-yard radius gets sucked into it. And all unsecured objects and creatures get sucked towards it. If they reach the middle, they take 10d6 and detonate the black hole. You know, everything gets a little weird after that. But what I'm not sure exactly how that would help, although it's super tempting. I'm thinking air might be making his way calmly yet directly down to the escape pods.
So you're right in that, as demonstrated by the law speaker when he was ejected back to Mother Yorf. Your ship does have whirlers, which are a good way to deliver people to planetary surfaces. They act as paragliders and can enter the atmosphere at just the right angle to minimize the fiery stage of re-entry and keep acceleration to a minimum. And so you would tumble to Earth, so to speak, were you to jump into one of those escape pods. They are limited in how many people can get aboard them. We've already ascertained that Gigi would take up one because of his girth. The second one, because one was lost, ejected into space with the law speaker, Crapty Thorfridson, on board. The second one would contain perhaps two people and the bear cubs, or three people. It's entirely up to you how you wish to proceed. The dogs probably going to become gap farers. Moral dilemmas.
Well, I mean, meanwhile, you are talking to the crew who keeps putting men in front of us as bear bait and zombie bait and Orcneus bait.
We are the trolley problem.
I figured the entrails that were being woven in front of us were probably from all of our former companions.
I have a question for Air before I go and do something rash. Could you ask the seer in your ear if it's the ship itself that is the problem that is being corrected by the Norns, or us?
Oh.
In a yes or no question, that's up to you.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
That way, if we know, perhaps it's a navigational error. We left out of phase, out of time. Cole took us down a slightly wrong path. All we have to do is jump over to the right path and this thing will go bye-bye.
Okay. Yes or no question. Air will ask the seer in his ear. I wish there was something that rhymed with scald, because it would fit. It would be more thematically correct. Can the occupants of the ship leave the influence of the weavers, or leave the effect of the weavers?
Ronnie, you're good friend, who doesn't bear a grudge at all against Gyorgoth, says yes. And at that same time, you hear the weaver echoing through the ship as it says,
"So weave we weird sisters our web of war."
And under sustained assault, the Falkir slides out of the Hell Roads, and you see through the hollows of the ship that you have appeared high above Mother Yorf. There is a violent shudder as this ship that was already suffering from hull stress groans and rents in two. The structural integrity has begun to crumble, especially because of the interior damage done by the grenades.
You're welcome, says Gigi.
Air will announce in a loud, clear voice, abandon Falkir. It just wants the ship.
Lyomi's running for the bear cubs and then to an escape pod.
Not my escape pod.
Now, there are gap suits. Can Gigi fit in one?
None of them are XXXXL size.
Can he just take the breathing apparatus and a parachute so that there's enough whirlers for everyone else to get off, and then he's just going to go Red Bull style into the thermosphere?
Red Bulls.
And ride the heavens behind the whirlers.
I'm not sure that anyone has said, yeah, but for example, just last week, didn't they pick up some people from the International Space Station by sending a vehicle? If they could have just jumped out of it.
Yes, but this is Gigi. He's not one of those wimpy astronauts up on the
space. Those astronauts didn't finish second in the All Asgard games.
With the proper breathing apparatus, I think he could pull it off.
It's not breathing apparatus is the problem. It's the intense thermal heat that comes as you spiral through the atmosphere that reduces rock to nothing.
Oh, that rules
an angle.
See, now CJ, this is how you interact with the GM.
Uh-huh. It's
yeah.
A barrage of bullshit.
Yeah.
It's a whirler or bust.
Can anything else fit in the whirler with Gigi? Can he take some of the cubs at least?
Bill has got them under his arms, a bit like pigs to market.
Chubby little cubs.
I think at this point you would feel a hand on your shoulder, Gigi, as Cole comes up beside you and says, get to the whirler, get off the ship. The
captain's going to go down with the ship.
Boo. But fine.
Well, Air could just jump out. He's diamond encrusted. I mean, that's harder than space shuttle tiles. Again. Not that those always work.
Not harder than meteorites.
He said reduced rock to slag.
Yeah, I feel like that was a pointed statement, actually, now that I think back on it.
Air is one of the whirlers reading the instruction manual. Thank you for purchasing the Mark I whirler. We hope it'll bring you many years of worry-free escaping.
That's canon now.
Bill, are you rushing to...
I am.
...jump in with... You know, Steve, you haven't called in an abomination for a while, and now you're going to be in close quarters.
Nope.
There's not much room.
Nope.
There's not much room, Steve. You're going to have to kind of...
I'm basically climbing in on top of you, shoving bear cubs in your face. So what you going to do about it?
I might maybe get out and ride on... Wait a minute. Could a person ride down on a whirler? Because you're behind the thermal shock thing. Science.
Ooh, like yeah. Dr. Strangelove, just riding the missile in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of Gigi's thing, but why not let Air have a turn?
Give it a whirl.
Oh. Nice.
All right, let's, I'll mute myself.
Let's mute myself. I'll get my coat. I think staying inside the whirler is the critical... So the two of you have a little bicker as Lyomi tries to muscle in and give you a bear hug, literally. Cole, you are facing a dilemma, as Bill said. Is this the moment where Captain Cole goes down with the ship? Do you want to try and take this weaver with you and undo the threads of fate? Do you want to see if you can destroy the creature with the aid of Air and his ability to summon minuscule black holes, or do you want to entreat Gigi to help you with one last bandolier of grenades?
Good question. I want to keep the ship as structural as possible into the last possible minute so that I can ensure that these three get off. My gut says I'll take the bandolier of grenades, head up to the Raven's Nest, and just do whatever I can to keep the ship limping along until I see that the Weavers are safely away, and then let's detonate.
Gigi, you pirouetting through the low gravity towards your whirler, or are you going to...
Stopping by the armory on the way to grab some supplies, because guaranteed wherever we land, we're going to need to shoot some things.
Okay.
How many whirlers are there?
Two.
Oh, okay. So there's like 20 of them.
That's the problem.
Yeah. It's a scarcity problem. If there were enough supply and demand, then everyone would be jumping on board. CJ, what are you packing, so to speak? Because it's not like you've got one of those magnificent knapsacks that you can pluck any ammunition and gun from. Now I'm going to have to make you have a choice.
I'm going to take a shaker, a Skogul machine gun, and I'll leave behind the flamethrower because it's out of fuel anyway.
You swap munitions and head towards the whirler with no choice but to evacuate using these escape pods. You press the eject button and glide into the atmosphere. Both whirlers are protected by the reinforced cabin. You tumble and spiral like a sycamore seed in the breeze, twirling through the upper atmosphere. Captain Cole, holding tight onto the controls, trying to steer the ship away from the planet's atmosphere, but the heat becomes intense as you cascade towards Mother Yorf.
As it's clear that the ship is going down, do I have comms with the Weavers at all?
You do. There's certainly a moment here where you can convey the wisdom of the ages to your departing friends.
Exactly. And such wisdom as I can come up with. You hear Cole come over the radio and say, "You three bear witness to the reality of the doom and are the key to stopping the next one. Do not let humanity, Alfar, and all others down with your task. Go well and be well." And then I'm going to like drop the comms, run down to wherever the Weaver is with the grenades, and just let's detonate it.
The rest of you splash down near a high and imposing headland, and you are able to wade from your whirlers across a sandy beach to safety. The evening twilight is grey and sullen, and there is frost on the ground. Above you, the Falkir plummets through the heavens, bursting into bright flame. The wreck hurtles through the night sky, accompanied by furious winds, thunder, and lightning, and then disappears over the horizon. Are you having a moment, a minute silence for the fallen?
Yes.
Yeah. I am impressed that you are actually shocked and forlorn, because normally the guests die and you just like, oh, bye. Taylor, you obviously got a special place in their heart.
Aw, yes. Untouched.
There's none so rare as can compare with Cole and his idiots three.
Yes. That's you could play in here near my god to thee or something. That would probably work. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, exactly.
Or Highway to Hell. That might be good as well.
Boy.
Well done, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if...
How many episodes was that?
If Gigi is upset because he didn't actually actively accidentally kill this one.
He gave me the grenades.
I mean...
It was a handing of the grenades, you know.
This record stands.
You shiver in the cold, apart from Air, who doesn't feel a thing, because he's an unfeeling bastard. Not far from your landing site. Not far from your landing site, you spy a longhouse with wooden walls and a turf roof, lit by fire pits at the west end. There is no other signs of life. There's no Imperial ships in the sky. There's no
No Statue of Liberty?
Exactly. No Statue of Liberty. Just a traditional wooden longhouse.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Where the fuck are we?
When the fuck are we?
Who the fuck are we?
The Vikings and Valkyries podcast is hammered together by a dedicated team of Skalds and Smiths. Please don't forget to like, share, and sacrifice to the old gods.